Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to the Mind, Body, and Spirit radio show produced by the Healthy Referral newspaper, a mission that began back in 1986 to 1989, and it's been an absolute blessing and an amazing one throughout these 24-plus years. And we have a topic today and a wonderful guest and a longtime friend of ours. It's Can We Reverse Heart Disease and Chronic Conditions Through Nutrition through a plant-based diet? And Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn, and some people like to say Esselstyn, but we can have that conversation. Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn, Jr. MD, will share with us that this is the case. Dr. Esselstyn has been a surgeon, researcher, and clinician at the Cleveland Clinic for more than 35 years and is the first recipient of the Benjamin Spock Award for Compassion in Medicine. The energy that goes on behind the scenes with such a topic can be an amazing energy. And through these years, Dr. Esselstyn has proven many, many aspects in regards to nutrition and diet. One of the things that I found interesting is his pioneering energy through the plant-based diet throughout these years. And there's a lot of different things can be said about him, and I know we said a few, but the most important thing is that I feel, and we feel, that his greatest contribution to the health sciences began whenever he started a 20-year peer review study, which found that a plant-based diet can help heart disease patients. And his findings are summarized in his book entitled Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease. So today we want to welcome our dear longtime friend, Dr. Esselstyn. Are you there?
Marcia, thank you. I certainly am here, and I thank you for this opportunity to share with your listeners what we've learned through our research and what are the clinical strategies so that coronary or artery heart disease, the leading killer of women and men in Western civilization, is nothing more than a toothless paper tiger that need never, ever exist. And if it does exist, it need never, ever progress. This is a foodborne illness.
Absolutely. And Dr. Esselstyn, this goes back quite a while with you. So we can kind of just start back in, I believe, if I remember what I had been reading through time, it was back in like the late 70s and early 80s that you actually got things underway, and you found yourself somewhat frustrated with the fact that no matter how many of the operations that you were doing, you know, for women, that there was not really one single aspect that you know, you thought you were doing for the next unexpected victim or person or whatever. So is this what really finally led you to start down the path?
Well, without question. When I was chairman of our breast cancer task force, and it was so frustrating, for no matter how many women I was doing breast surgery, I was doing absolutely nothing for the next unsuspecting victim. And that led to a bit of global research, which, and sure enough, breast cancer in Kenya was something like 30 to 40 times less frequent in the United States. And in rural Japan in the 1950s, the breast cancer was very infrequently identified. And yet as soon as the Japanese women would migrate to the United States, by the second and third generation, still pure Japanese American, they now had the same rate of breast cancer as their Caucasian counterparts. So much for race.
I wonder why.
Well, it was very powerful, and even more powerful, perhaps, was cancer of the prostate, which in 1958, in the entire nation of Japan, how many autopsy-proven deaths were there from cancer of the prostate? 18 in the entire nation, and that was up to 137 by 1978, but that still pales in comparison to the 28,000 who will die this year in this country. So there were some very, very powerful epidemiological expressions, and that's when I sort of made a decision. I thought my bones would long be dust before I could get answers between cancer and nutrition, although in hindsight I'm not sure that's accurate. But nevertheless, I felt that we could make better headway if we could get everybody to look at cardiovascular disease, the leading killer of women and men in Western civilization, because if you would eat actually to save your heart, then you'd probably also be protecting yourself from so many of these common Western malignancies as well.
It is rather interesting, and I'd like to just hear what you have to say in regards to this. Something as simple, something as natural as our diets, and how so many people have gotten away from and perhaps never have eaten what's considered, you know, real food, food that hasn't been altered, processed, manufactured in a way that changes all of it molecularly. What do you feel really gotten people to this point?
Well, I think that if you will look at, let's just start for a moment and look what we know historically. For instance, if you were a cardiac surgeon and you decided you were going to hang out your shingle in rural China, or the Papua Highlands in New Guinea, or Central Africa, or the Tarahumara Indians in northern Mexico, forget it. You know, you might as well plan on selling pencils, because you aren't going to find cardiovascular disease there because they are largely plant-based. Now, on the other hand, there's some very interesting challenges that we've identified in this country. For instance, prior to that, I should mention that there was an opportunity during World War II when we really could have gained a great deal of insight into the cause of strokes and heart attacks, which is what occurred when the Axis powers of Germany overran the Low Countries of Holland and Belgium and the occupied Denmark and Norway. And it was quite characteristic of the Germans to take the livestock from these cultures and give it to their troops. So their cattle, their sheep, their goats, their pigs, their chickens, their turkeys were gone. So suddenly now these Western European nations were plant-based during the war years from 39 to 45. And in 1951, Drs. Strom and Janssen wrote a very penetrating article in England's leading medical journal, The Lancet, and they looked at the deaths from heart attack and stroke between 1939 and 1945 in Norway, and they absolutely plummeted. And it wasn't really, and nobody really felt this was because the Germans had suddenly become the greatest public health educators in Europe, but it was this deprivation of meat and dairy, and sure enough, this lowering of deaths from heart attack and stroke immediately stopped with cessation of hostilities, because immediately back came the meat, back came the dairy, back came the strokes, and back came the heart attack. Now, so that took us up to about 1953 or 4, and now more recently we have all that autopsy data from our young GIs who died in combat in Korea and Vietnam at an average age of 20, 80% of them, without a microscope at autopsy, you could see a gross evidence of coronary artery disease of the heart. not enough to have their cardiac events yet, but that was very impressive to think that when you autopsied the Koreans and the Vietnamese, it wasn't 80%, it was 1% or 3%. So if you look at the repeat of that study in 1999, 40 years later, this time looking at young women and men who have are between the ages of 17 and 34 who have died of, in this country, of accidents, homicides, and suicides. Hmm. Now the disease is ubiquitous. Everybody. Not enough, again, for your heart attack yet, but there you are, sprouting this vascular disease, coronary artery disease, in practically everybody. So when you graduate from high school in this country, you not only get a diploma, but you get coronary artery disease, which is really almost disgraceful when you think about it.
It is.
It just is it's a very sad testament to our inability to really make these kinds of changes, because we know what can be done, because when we see these patients now who, and by the time they're in their 40s, 50s, and so on, they start having cardiac events, chest pain, heart attacks, the need for bypasses and stents, which is nothing more than a temporary patch job, does nothing whatsoever for the treatment of the causation of this disease. And so it's really a problem to get the word across that the research is sophisticated enough now that we can identify exactly how this all comes about. And all experts in this disease would agree that the inception of this disease occurs when we begin to destroy the lifeguard or the guardian, the life jacket of our blood vessels, which is a single layer, a very thin single layer of cells that lines our arteries. It's called the endothelium. And the endothelium performs a very, very remarkable and almost magical function of making this molecule that all of us thrive on called nitric oxide. It's a gas. And nitric oxide, to protect us, has some very, very wonderful properties. It makes sure that our blood is flowing smoothly. That is to say, all these cellular elements in our bloodstream, as they flow through our blood vessels, we don't want them to be sticky. We want it to be smooth like Teflon rather than like Velcro. That's nitric oxide that contributes to that. It is the strongest vasodilator in the body. That is to say, when you climb stairs, the arteries to your heart, the arteries to your legs will dilate to carry more blood. That's nitric oxide. Nitric oxide will also protect you from getting inflammation in the wall of the blood vessel. This will keep it from developing stiffness, protect you from high blood pressure, and most importantly, nitric oxide in its plentiful amounts will keep you from ever developing blockages or plaque. So when we recognize that people who are having a heart attack either have a plaque that is blocking their artery or a plaque that has ruptured and is now spilling its contents into the flowing blood, which initiates a great clotting response, so that suddenly, this, as the clot develops, it can block the vessel. Well, all of this development, we now know, is due to the fact that people who are having these problems, obviously their nitric oxide level has been so low that it no longer can protect them from developing these blockages or plaque. But when you think back on what I said earlier, by the time somebody is a senior in high school, their nitric oxide has gotten low enough so that they start to build this disease. So you might say, well, what in the world is going on? How do we injure or compromise the capacity of these wonderful endothelial cells to make this magical nitric oxide? And fortunately, the research is sophisticated enough now to make us aware of the fact that every time that there are certain foods that pass our lips, we injure, we imperil, we compromise the capacity of those delicate endothelial cells to make nitric oxide.
There's been a lot more conversation about, just in fact, the other day I had a call from a person and they knew that, this topic is a topic that's being covered. Are you there?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I'm hearing beeps on my end. And this person had been dealing with cardiovascular issues and began to make a transition into a more plant-based diet. And they were commenting on how years ago, whenever the fast food industries really, really started in full force, and how at that particular time they said, wow, we are in big trouble. And not only from an adult aspect, but this person having children starting out and knowing that, okay, this is what is being introduced or trying to be introduced to the general public. And many of us knew that it could be the downfall in many ways to not only us as adults, of course, but to the next generation that, is who we are talking about now. And the incorporation of soda, soda pop, and all these things that are a daily diet for so many young children. I'll never forget, Dr. Esselstyn, the one time that I was walking down an aisle at the grocery store and I saw this little baby with it must have been maybe 16, 17 months old. And I'm looking at this child, and he's holding a bottle, and I'll tell you what, I was hoping I was seeing incorrectly, but it looked like there was Kool-Aid in this bottle. And you just, from the heart level, it's like from the heart level, it was just very, very sad to see that this is how so many people either think or don't think. So the work that you have been doing, that you continue to do, I know it has also stemmed from your awareness for yourself. And at one point early on, trying to remember if I read correctly, that you actually did this system on yourself for like the first year or so?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think it's nobody's immune, so it was obviously very appropriate. I've tried increasingly to get away from using the word diet because I've never liked the word diet. It seems to be like it sounds like you're punishing somebody or there is going to be a finite end to this after something is achieved. But what we really
try
to...
word.
What we try to do is have people eat a whole foods, plant-based type of diet. It's not any of the V words. Because I do treat vegans for heart disease. They eat French fries, they eat oil, they eat glazed donuts. But I wanted to come back for a minute to explain what are the foods that we know now because of a rather sophisticated test called the brachial artery tourniquet test, which still is a research tool, but we now know that within minutes of the ingestion of certain foods, we injure our endothelial cells. And all these repetitive injuries result in forcing the nitric oxide level so low in our bodies that the protection is lost. What are these foods that injure? Oil, interestingly enough. Olive oil, corn oil, soybean oil, safflower oil, sunflower oil, palm oil, coconut oil, canola oil. Oil injures the endothelial cells. Dairy, milk, cream, butter, cheese, ice cream, yogurt injure endothelial cells. And anything with a mother, anything with a face, meat, fish, chicken, and turkey, etc. And interestingly enough, sugar, especially its fructose, which is the rascal. So there's so much of what we in America are eating every day that is so sufficiently injuring our endothelial cells that by the time we're in grammar school, we've already got the injury well on its way. And obviously through the rest of high school, we just further push this along so that, as I mentioned earlier, anybody who dies accidentally by or accidents, homicides, and suicides at a young age, the disease is established. But I really have to say that there is some good news in this message, and that is the following. That what we decided to do back in 1985 when we started this, after I've been doing it for a year myself, when we took a group of patients who were severely ill with heart disease and got them to give up the American diet and eat fully plant-based like these cultures where heart disease is virtually non-existent. That is to say, they were thriving now on whole grains for their cereal, bread, and pasta, 101 different types of legumes or beans, all the red, yellow, and especially green leafy vegetables and some fruit. And there are now hundreds and hundreds of recipes that are available to make these absolutely delightful and delicious. And yet, when you stop the oil, when you stop the dairy, when you stop the meat, when you stop that sugar, when you stop the caffeine in coffee, you stop the injury to the endothelial cell. And inasmuch as this is not cancer, the endothelial cell has a remarkable capacity to restore and come back. And as it raises the level of nitric oxide, cardiovascular disease is halted, and we have often seen it significantly reverse.
And in, you know, being significantly reversed, are we talking about, because you're using the word significantly, so do they see somewhat of a difference, an immense difference, or an actual reversal?
Yeah, in our book we have photographs of the angiograms, and angiograms are x-rays of the blood vessels going to the heart. And there they were, you know, severely narrowed when they started, and we've seen it. We've seen situations where they remarkably back open up and the disease is reversed. And that's so exciting and reassuring for patients, because what is so meaningful about it is that the patients themselves, when they comprehend this and get it straight, realize that with all due respect to the cardiac surgeon and the cardiologist, it is they themselves who become the locus of control for halting and reversing this disease.
In regards to the book, and I actually have some additional information up in front of me in regards to the book, if we could just spend another moment or two in regards to the book so that people really have a clear idea and as to how they can even get the book, et cetera. So if you could share a little bit about that.
Well, the book is available at any bookstore. It can be ordered. If they don't have it, it can be ordered over Amazon. I think if there's anybody who's anywhere near a Whole Foods market, I think they often carry it as well. But it shares our experience with these patients. It has many of their stories. It shows the angiograms, that is to say the x-rays of showing that indeed the disease can be reversed. And then it defines how this can be done. What are the foods to eat? And it's also, very importantly, what are the foods to give up, because sadly, with all due respect to my cardiovascular colleagues today, there has been sort of a feeling amongst that, especially that patients won't make these rather profound nutritional changes that are required. And somebody might say, for instance, well, Dr. Esselstyn, what you're requiring is a pretty radical or extreme, and I will agree that the change is significant. But on the other hand, I think I can make a very good case that the diet that is extreme is the American diet, which results in 33% of the population being obese, 67% being overweight. There's an epidemic of high blood pressure, hypertension, an epidemic of diabetes, an epidemic of heart disease, an epidemic of strokes. This disease, 40 years ago, cardiovascular disease, was the leading killer of women and men in Western civilization. And now here we are, 40 years later, here we are at the same place. This is not, and this is not cancer. This is a disease for which we know the exact answer. This is not due to your genes. It's not due to your stress. It's not due to the luck of the draw. It's due to the fact that it is a foodborne illness. You injure your endothelial cells.
Well, Dr. Esselstyn, what I feel with your comment just now is, you know, what you've done is you've given the people the benefit of a doubt, knowing that there are many, 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 many people who, when given the help, the correct information, because what seems simple or just, you know, making sense to one person isn't necessarily that for the next person. So when we give the knowledge or help someone gain the knowledge, then they are willing to take a turn and do things differently. And without getting into this part, because we really don't have very much more time too, but you know, it's kind of sad to even say and think too that, you know, there are certain energies out there that would prefer, you know, having people have to keep going through things because it keeps them in business. And I'm not saying that directly to anyone or about anyone. But, you know, it is the case out in our world. So I just congratulate you in, you know, bringing people or allowing people to come into the fold, because you know that when they're given the correct information, you know, they're going to lean into that. And it's been our pleasure and our joy to, you know, have had you at our International Natural Health and Foods Expos. And I remember you actually having your, if I remember correctly, your first five people who you had done this with, you know, at the expo. And it was just a joy to see people connecting and relating to the message that you were given. So, Tom and I want to thank you as well as all the listeners. And again, the book that we've been talking about that Dr. Esselstyn has written is Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease. And in closing, is there anything you'd like to say?
Well, I think that if we are really truly to have a seismic revolution in health, which I think we can be right on the cusp of that. And the seismic revolution in health, let me just to say that it would be best exemplified. If I take somebody, let's say, who's he or she is 245 pounds, and they've had a heart attack, but they also have diabetes, and they also have high blood pressure, and they're obese, but they get it. And a year, year and a half later, they now weigh 155. Their risk for heart attack is gone. The risk for stroke is gone. Their diabetes is gone. Their high blood pressure is gone. And their obesity is gone. Now, there's not one single pill on the planet that will ever do that. That's lifestyle. And if we're going to really have a seismic revolution in health, it'll never come from a pill. It'll never come from a procedure. It'll never come from building another cardiac cathedral. It'll never come from a procedure or an operation. But it can come when we in the profession will have the grit, the determination, and the will to share with the public what really is the lifestyle and nutritional literacy that will allow them to be the locus of control to avoid so many of these common chronic killing diseases that need never, never exist. Thank you.
I totally know that many of the people listening are going, thank you for this information. And we want to thank you for taking this time today. And I'm sure that the book is going to benefit a lot more people. So, Dr. Esselstyn, thanks so much for being with us today.
All right. Thanks, Marcia. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. And thank you, listeners. for tuning in to Mind, Your Body, and Spirit Radio Show. You can call us at 216-533-2273. That's 216-533-2273. See you next week.